The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at NewBalance.com.
Hey, y'all. I'm Bud Elliott, and this is Cover 3 College Football Summer School. We've done our research on the teams, and now we're bringing on the top team experts from the 24/7 Sports Network to help us fill in the blanks. Please follow us on Twitter at Cover 3 Podcast. That's Cover 3 Podcast. And leave us a 5-star review on Apple and Spotify. All right. Class is in session. Hey guys, I'm Bud Elliott. Welcome back into the Cover 3 College Ball Podcast. This is our summer school edition, and today we're going to talk a little LSU, a school near and dear to my heart. Obviously, my wife went there and go to probably at least one LSU game a year. To help us do this, we're going to go 24/7's Matt Bruni. Matt, what's going on, dude?
Hey, man, doing well. I didn't know your wife went to LSU, but that's good information there.
She did. So, like, anytime we go to crawfish boil or barbecue, you know, it's, hey, what are you thinking? Like, I gotta text Matt, gotta text Shay, and see what the details are. They need to get a subscription to Go 24/7 and check it out for that great VIP content you guys put over there and the Go 24/7 podcast.
Yeah, I mean, this was my first year here, so it was a big adjustment experience going from North Texas to LSU, but it's been awesome first year, so I've enjoyed it.
That is drinking out of a fire hose for sure. So yes. Brian Kelly comes in to replace Ed Orgeron, and just a really proven, solid head coach. We were looking around, Tom Fornelli and myself, on Cover 3 that one night. I think Chip might have been on there too. What about Brian Kelly? Like, if the AD at LSU wants to go big game hunting, that's kind of one of the names remaining if they're not going to get Jimbo, and they damn sure did. I didn't really call it. I was just kind of throwing it out there, like, hey, what about him? Yeah. And what's been the reaction to LSU fans now that the whole dancing and, you know, family thing has calmed down a little bit?
I mean, even during that time, they weren't they didn't throw him in the fire because of it. You know, it's kind of like it became that whole thing that you heard on, you know, every single podcast. I think y'all talked about it as well. But it's like if he wins, it doesn't matter. You know, that's the whole thing. And that's the big thing with LSU fans is figuring out how to win, because even Ed Orgeron, their own, you know, brother, their Louisiana family ended up losing, and they were quick to turn on him. So it becomes a whole process of, can you win? Can you recruit? And I think Brian Kelly, I mean, he's obviously done that at Notre Dame, Cincinnati, wherever he's been. So I think there's a lot of trust, and I think there's a belief. And I think throughout this spring, in being able to talk to players, talk to coaches, the biggest word has been accountability to this point. And that's kind of been the biggest difference from players, is what they've said, at least, is this. I mean, Brian Kelly and this coaching staff will hold you accountable at all times in everything you do. And so that's kind of been the adjustment so far.
Awesome. All right. So let's go and start on the offensive side of the ball here. There is quite a bit of turnover in some, you know, some of these positional units. They bring in coordinator Mike Dembrock from Cincinnati. What do you expect him to run? Is there anything really like drastically different from what LSU was running in terms of scheme or pace?
I would say so, just off of what we saw in spring practice. We know Dembrock and Kelly have utilized tight ends a little bit more in their offenses, Notre Dame and Cincinnati, and, you know, if you go down the list of where they've been. But LSU doesn't really have tight end depth right now. So it's made it a really interesting proposition to where you have basically two tight ends that LSU does. And one was a walk-on who now has a scholarship in Jack Mashburn. And then Cole Taylor is your other one. And then they're bringing in a freshman tight end. And, you know, you don't expect him to really be a contributor. So it's, how are they going to utilize the offense without maybe having that go-to tight end or even a, you know, quality tight end? I know Cole Taylor's made strides, but that's the biggest thing for me. So you might see a little bit more four receiver sets than they've ran in the past because there's so much wide receiver talent. And that's exciting to people because we did see that in the spring game, but there have been tight formations. There have been motions. I think it was a very basic scheme that we saw in the spring game. So I'm not putting too much into that. But what made it interesting as well was the addition of Jaden Daniels. And so do they want to go a little bit more mobile? Are they comfortable with Brennan? And so I think the overall scheme is still getting processed at the moment, but it's definitely different than what we saw last year.
At that quarterback position, I'm just fascinated as to how this battle shakes out. People had wildly different opinions on Jaden Daniels, both as a recruit and then also based on what he did at Arizona State. Miles Brennan comes back, and Nussmeier is still there as well. So is there somebody in your mind that you would pick over the other two right now as far as who you think wins this job?
It's so tough. I mean, you mentioned Daniels, the crazy just amount of uncertainty that I feel like Daniels has coming out of spring amongst LSU fans. So we ran a poll. And it got about 500 votes on our board about who the fans, obviously people on our message board who pay attention to LSU sports, who they thought would be the starter for week one against Florida State. 77% of the votes went to Miles Brennan. And 8%, the lowest amount, went to Jaden Daniels. I think 17%, something like that, was at Garrett Nussmeier. And so I think there's a lot of trust in Miles Brennan at this point. And Brian Kelly has talked about Miles Brennan's experience and his ability to deliver throws on time, on target. So when you hear all that and you see Miles Brennan returning for a sixth season or whatever it is, you expect him to kind of get the starting job. Jaden Daniels is a completely different player, and that's what makes it so difficult for me to project, because if Mike Denbrock wants a mobile quarterback, there's not really a choice here. Jaden Daniels. So that's what I'm interested in. Garrett Nussmeier also had a really, really good spring game. He had the best spring game. He has a live arm. I'm really high on Garrett Nussmeier, and that's what makes it such an interesting competition. I will say I think Miles Brennan's in the lead probably at this moment.
Awesome. Am I wrong to think that Davis Price is sort of an underrated loss for LSU? I'm looking at how I thought their run blocking last year was kind of sketchy, and yet he made the most situations just statistically. But you watch more LSU games than I'm able to, certainly.
Oh, no, it was definitely sketchy early in the year. I mean, the first half of the year, it was awful. They couldn't figure out their RPO scheme. They couldn't figure out run blocking. That was like the talk of every single week was, how are you going to figure out the run schemes? And they just really couldn't until maybe the second half of the year. I'd say that Alabama game and the game before the Alabama game, I'm not remembering. Oh, well, the Florida game that I have right there on the newspaper. The Florida game where Ty Davis Price ran for like 300 yards. That was big as that was kind of a breakthrough moment. So, yeah, they figured it out. And I think Ty Davis Price, I mean, he went in the third round of the NFL draft, which I think is higher than most people thought. But he has that talent. Now replacing him, you look at John Emery, you look at Armani Goodwin, Corey Kiner, who got the second most amount of carries, transferred out last year. And then, they add Noah Kane, Penn State transfer, and Trey Bradford, who was here last year, but joined the team about halfway through the year. So I think they have the bodies, but I think it's going to come more down to the offensive line than it is to the running backs. But John Emery was a former five-star as well.
Yeah, John Emery definitely has quite a bit of ability if you can put that all together and stay healthy. You did mention the offensive line. Let's go there then, Matt. So they lose their top four players by snap count, but they bring in Frazier. They bring in Trevon Shorts, two guys from the transfer portal. What are you expecting here from this group?
I expect continuity. I'm excited because you mentioned Trevon Shorts, who's gotten a lot of reps at starting guard position. Miles Frazier has bounced around from tackle to guard. They trust him a lot. But Will Campbell, true freshman, five-star, has gotten a lot of reps at starting left tackle. And we haven't seen Garrett Dellinger and Marlon Martinez, two offensive linemen that were out for the spring that I think could compete for starting jobs. So that changes things. But Will Campbell getting starting left tackle reps was not something I completely expected to this point. But he's looked just amazing. He's a beast. And so if he can take that left tackle position that kind of makes life a lot easier. You've been able to see them move things around. I do have concerns about Charles Turner at center just because he's kind of an unknown at this point. But, you know, Tremont Shorts, Miles Frazier, Cam Wire coming back at right tackle. He's the one returner of the five that you talked about. So I feel good about their depth, and I feel good about what they've done there, mostly because of those additions of Frazier and Shorts and Campbell.
You mentioned them having to potentially use more four receiver sets than they'd like to. If you have to use four receiver sets, though, it does help to have a pretty damn talented receiver room. And I feel like, obviously I'm a recruiting guy. I'm going down this list. There's a lot of names that recruiting people are going to recognize here. And almost everybody of consequence is back for this group.
Yeah, obviously Kayshon Boutte is the biggest name here. And if you get him and you get him clicking, you get him for a full season, that changes just everything about this offense. So you start with him. Malik Nabers has been one of my favorite receivers to watch out of spring camp. He catches everything. He has great catch radius, and he makes plays. And then Jack Besh is kind of the other slot. You expect to get a ton of snaps, a ton of catches. He had plenty of big plays last year. Brian Thomas, Kyron Lacy, transfer from UL, Chris Hilton, Dre Jenkins. And so you put that all together, it's a really exciting wide receiver room. I mentioned the tight end room not being as exciting, but the receiver room is going to make up for that, at least from a receiving standpoint, in bunches.
Let's go ahead and go to the other side of the ball. They did hire Matt House, the coordinator, right?
Mm-hmm.
For DC?
Yep, Matt House.
I thought that was a really pretty inspired hire. I think I'm just personally a little bit higher on him than I am on Dimbrock. Not to say Dimbrock can't or won't do a good job. Obviously, Cincinnati just went to the playoffs, so you know. Up front, though, one of the main issues LSU had to fix, in my opinion, was their run defense. And last year at times, they just were, you know, getting gashed on it. I thought that was sort of a continuation, surprisingly so, from 2020. But it's hard to take a whole lot from a 2020 COVID year. For sure. They lose Neil Farrell and Glenn Logan, correct? Both those guys are gone.
Farrell went in the third round, and Logan signed an undrafted free agent.
But I feel like there's some talent here. I mean, Jaquelli Roy is not bad. And Mason Smith, obviously, if he takes a leap in year two, is there a chance they don't downgrade here or maybe even upgrade?
I think they're going to be really good. Like, the defensive line is going to be – the defensive line and receiver are going to be the best two units on this team. The defensive line – Ollie Gay was going to be an NFL draft pick before he got injured halfway through the year. And I think Jaquelin Roy is going to be drafted round. I mean, I've seen a lot of mocks with him round one, and I would probably say round two or three to be safe. But I mean, if Jaquelin Roy ends up playing to that potential, that's huge. Mason Smith, in my opinion, is the most exciting player on this team. He was a former five-star. He's an absolute monster on the defensive line. And then B.J. Ojulari is a lot of mock drafts in first round next year as well. So you put that together, this is by far, to me, the most exciting unit on the team, this four group. And you could argue it's a 4-2-5 or a 3-3-5, however you want to, you know, or say whatever you want to say it is. B.J. Ojulari at kind of a jack position, kind of like Josh Allen played at Kentucky. And that's really exciting to me because I think B.J. Ojulari has that versatility and also is just a tremendous pass rusher. I'm not saying he's going to be Josh Allen from Kentucky, but he can definitely play that role to a degree. And I think that's what Matt House kind of brings. So the defensive line is something I'm excited to see.
It's certainly not crazy to think his upside is comparable to Josh Allen. Whether he hits it is another story, but I like that comp, especially with the scheme fit. Mm-hmm. Linebacker should be very good, I would think. Almost everybody's back.
Yeah. Besides Damone Clark, right. Yeah, they bring everybody back. But Micah Baskerville was the other starter last year. He's been kind of in and out of the doghouse, I guess. He didn't get a ton of reps during the spring, so we're not really sure where he is at the moment. The two linebackers that have been getting the most reps in, like I said, if you want to call it a 4-2-5, 3-3-5, the two inside linebackers, might have been Mike Jones, a transfer from Clemson 2 years ago, or before last year. Last year he seldomly played, then played outside linebacker a bit when they went to a scheme change. And then Greg Penn, who's a sophomore, and he's impressed a lot of people. So Mike Jones, Greg Penn at linebacker, they've added some depth from the transfer portal with Colby Fields from South Carolina, Wes Weeks from Virginia. Harold Perkins, you know, depends where they want to play him, but the five-star linebacker that they got, he's going to step on campus, and I expect him to get snaps as a freshman. So, yeah, you add all that together, and then Baskerville's still there, like I said. I think it's a solid linebacker room. They are going to have to prove it to me a bit because Mike Jones, like I said, didn't play a ton last year. Greg Penn didn't. I mean, he was like the third or fourth linebacker last year. So there are some changes, but I think it'll be easier playing behind that defensive line and playing in this system.
For sure. Curious about Wes Weeks. He's a guy I liked out. Like I really thought UVA stole him in that he was class of 21, I believe, right?
21, yeah. Played one year at UVA.
Which is obviously that year that nobody really got to see people in person because of COVID and all the visits were restricted or banned, unless you're Arizona State, then they were just wide open. But, you know, is he somebody they're high on? I mean, I know they took him in the portal, so there's got to be some level of being high on him. But is he working out already?
Yeah, no, he's been the second team linebacker pretty much the entire time. He's huge, and I saw that on film when I went and watched UVA. I mean, he's 6'3", strong. So I expect him to get some snaps in that linebacker room. Again, trying to discern, trying to figure out who the linebackers are behind Penn and Jones. I think at the moment it's iffy because of Baskerville and Perkins and kind of unknowns in that regard, but. I mean, I think Wes Weeks will get snaps as in that second team linebacker.
Awesome. So they do lose 4 out of 5 guys in the secondary who played 400 plus snaps last year, and that's not even including Stingley. But they bring in 4 transfers. I don't know, man. This is why we do this show. I'm deferring to you. I do not know what to make of this unit. Like, I think I like it given the experience of the transfers and who they got, but I don't know if I do. What should I like this unit?
We should love it. On paper, it's great. Jarek Bernard Converse, all Big 12 first team on one of the best defenses in the country. Makai Garner, UL first team or all Sun Belt team. He's looked really good in spring. Then you got the Arkansas guys, Joe Fuchsia and Greg Brooks, you know, part of that Arkansas resurgence. They've been starters throughout spring. And Jay Ward coming back from last year, the one returner. I thought he's been great during spring. So on paper, you have experience, you have versatility, you have a lot of guys that can cover that are, and they're also kind of big outside of Fuchsia and Brooks for the most part. Garner's pretty big. And Bernard's can hold his own with some bigger receivers. So I think that's exciting. Now, depth wise, you don't have a ton of depth at corner specifically. And I think that's the concern. They brought in 7 Banks from Ohio State, and that's going to be a big decider in how much depth they have. If he can play, I feel a lot better about the cornerbacks. If we don't know if he's injured or if, you know, if he gets back to where he used to be, if he doesn't, then I am a little concerned. But yeah, other than that, you have Sage Ryan, Matthew Langlaw, Major Burns coming back, Todd Harris. You have some talented guys at safety and nickel that can back up that they have as depth pieces, but corner, you know, the depth there is a little shaky. But the starters, I think, on paper should be solid.
Last one here, I'll get you out. We're talking to Matt Bruni of Go24/7. Is it nuts to think this team could finish anywhere from 6th to 2nd in the West?
The West, I mean, yeah, you know, the West is always just such a, I mean, outside of Alabama every year, it's always like, you know, who's the best team of that year? It's maybe Arkansas, maybe LSU, could be A&M. I think there's a real possibility of them getting to 8 wins on the season, 9 wins on the season. Their non-conference schedule is not very difficult outside of, I mean, Florida State is whatever. And then after that, it's pretty easy. I think there's a shot. I wouldn't bet on them coming in 2nd. I think that might be asking a lot of this team year one under Brian Kelly, but I think they're going to be competitive in most of their games. So I could see them coming in 3rd or 4th, and I think that'd be a really solid year, a really good first year for Brian Kelly.
No doubt about it. Kind of resetting the floor there and, you know, attacking and recruiting. Matt Bruni, Go24/7. Also check out the Go24/7 podcast. Really appreciate the time, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
No doubt. We'll check in again soon.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features ensure that you can take on any adventure. What kind of features? Well, how about the available H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud? Or the standard third row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together? How about available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone? We're always trying to think about those great spring and summer getaways, but with a car like the Hyundai Santa Fe, anywhere can be your next adventure. To learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe, go to HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for complete details. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe? Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey guys, welcome back into the Cover 3 College Football Podcast. I'm Bud Elliott, and this is Summer School. Today, we're going to be talking a little Tennessee, and you can see my background is different if you're watching us on YouTube at Cover 3 Podcast. That's because our studios are actually booked up here at 24/7 Sports, so I am coming to you literally in the state of Tennessee in the Country Music Television building from the Country Music SiriusXM CMT studio. Yeah, if it looks a little different, it sounds a little different, that's why, as opposed to our normal setup. To talk Tennessee today, though, we're going to go and bring on one of the foremost experts, Patrick Brown of GoVols 24/7. Patrick, welcome to the show, man.
Thanks, bud. Thanks for having me. Looking forward to talking some football today.
No doubt about it. Last year, really an excellent year for Tennessee and new coach Josh Heupel. I think all the power ratings had them as a legitimate top 20-ish team. I also have in my notes here that they caught UF when Florida was actually still trying. And so that was a very different team than if you got them, you know, way late in the year. What's the overall mood there in Knoxville?
I think it's hopeful, but I also think there's a little bit of, we've seen this movie before. You know, Tennessee is run through a handful of coaches over the past decade or so. And there's always been this point where, they win enough, or they get win some recruiting battles to get people sort of believing and buying into the future. And I think we're at that point with Tennessee and with Josh Heupel. Obviously, I think they exceeded expectations last season. The offense lived up to the billing that you expect from Josh Heupel with what he did at UCF. But they go out and they have a top 10 class. I think as we're talking right now, obviously the headliner is Nico Iamaleava, the five-star quarterback from California. That's obviously gotten a lot of more people on board, because coming in from UCF, that was a big question with Heupel, was can he recruit at this level? Can he recruit well enough to get Tennessee on similar footing with some of the other powers in the SEC? So I think the vibe around the program is hopeful and maybe cautiously optimistic. I do think Tennessee fans are realistic that there's a long way to go to get to Georgia and Alabama, who they obviously Tennessee has the luxury of playing every year. But I think there's some optimism and inside the program, there's a really good vibe. I think the culture has been was established last season and during Heupel's first year. And that can be one of the big steps that you can take as a new coach coming in.
No doubt about it. Look, you mentioned that offense, and last year, especially if you strip out the games in which they played Joe Milton, the majority of the snaps, and you look just the games that Hooker played, and you can, even if you control for pace, I mean, this was still a legitimate, like, top 10 offense in the whole country. Hooker was just extremely good at, like, maximizing the risk while actually not actually throwing the pick. I mean, I think it was, what, 31-3 touchdown interception ratio. That's, I mean, common sense. Hello. Very, very good. And also he was effective on the ground with Small as well. They got to be just over the moon with his performance last year. And yet I'm curious, like, where can he improve?
Yeah, I think that's a big question that we've asked a lot and that we've talked to Hendon about. And from talking to some coaches and talking to Hooker himself during spring ball, you know, he really sort of rededicated himself. He almost came in this offseason with a blank slate, acted like, you know, last year didn't happen. He's not letting the success get to his head. He obviously flirted with maybe going into the NFL draft after last season, but decided to come back and use his extra year. And from talking to him and talking to people around the program, I think he's kicked it up a notch. Obviously, some things that they expect him to get better at is just a better comfort level in the offense. You know, there's a lot of reads in this offense to what Josh Heupel does. A lot of what they do from play to play, because they're going so fast, is based on reads, what the defense is giving me, how many guys are in the box, what kind of coverage am I getting. All those things are, and they put a lot on the quarterback. So the longer you do something, the better theoretically you should get at it. And so that's what they're sort of pushing Hendon to go that way. Something that they talked about this spring was him being able to maybe manipulate defenses and maybe make them think that he's going here with the football instead he's going the other way. Little things like that. I think they have a better grasp now of how he is as a runner. He obviously is Tennessee fans like to compare him to Joshua Dobbs. I don't think he's as elite a runner as Josh Dobbs was, but he's up there. He's pretty close. And certainly you don't want to, you know, get your quarterback beat up too much, especially in the SEC. But something that I don't think they knew just from, you know, seeing him in practice where he's not live, where he can't get hit, seeing that part of his game come out last year, I think Tennessee knows now the best way to maybe utilize him and how they can, use him in the run game as an extra number and as a guy that can make defenses pay.
Yeah, his explosive run rates aren't, you know, huge, but the percentage of first down touchdown converted when he did decide to take off and scramble or even in some of the design run stuff was very high. Obviously, part of that, I think, an offensive line that played better than I thought they would last year, and now they return, six of their top seven?
Yes, four starters back. The only loss is Cade Mays, who was picked in the sixth round this past weekend.
I mean, that should be, I would think, an improved unit, even with the loss of Mays.
Yeah, they do have one. Obviously, they have got that tackle spot to fill, and based on what they did in the spring, they flipped Darnell Wright, the former five-star who was at left tackle last season, did a pretty good job. They flipped him back over to right, which is where he started his first 2 years, and they looked at a couple of guys there at that left tackle spot. One of them is Jeremiah Crawford, who's a second-year junior college transfer, and the other is Gerald Mincy, a transfer from Florida. That they recruited at UCF that they feel pretty good about. So it's probably going to be a two-man battle between those two guys. There's another Dane Davis was a guy who was Cade Mays' backup last season. So I think that's one of the competitions, for probably the biggest one on offense, that going into the season once they get to camp, that's going to be probably the headline one on offense as they try to fill that last piece.
If that's the headline one on offense, is – replacing Jones and Peyton at receiver the headline two or 1B?
Yeah, I would say it's those two. Those are the big ones. And you know, with, you know, Jones, you know, Bayless Jones was a really good player in the slot. Javonte Peyton was, his numbers weren't overwhelming, but his impact was. He was, I think all six of his touchdowns came in the first 20 minutes of games. And Tennessee had the best first quarter scoring average in the country, and I think had the best first quarter scoring differential in the country, if I'm remembering correctly. So all his touchdowns were 35 plus yards, just about two. So he was a big play guy with his speed. But they're sort of reshaping that group. Jalen Hyatt, I think, is poised to take over for Bayless Jones in the slot. Hyatt was a former four-star guy, a lot of speed with him. Didn't have the year that a lot of people thought he was going to have last season, but He's been a guy that's really rededicated himself this offseason. Came in early January and has just basically lived in the complex. Him and Hendon Hooker have built a pretty good rapport. Both watched a lot of film together, throwing a lot. Sometimes it's just them, even back before the team really reconvened for the start of the offseason. But He's put on 20 pounds. He's up to 184. So, they think he can play more physical and be able to hold up better in that part of the game. And at the other spot, you know, they're in a good position, I think, with Brew McCoy, the transfer from USC. I think he would possibly, potentially come in if they do end up pulling that one out, and probably be the starter across from Cedric Tillman, who obviously, having him back alleviates the loss of Velas and Javonte. So, if they get McCoy, I think he could be a starter. Ramel Keaton and some of those other guys that are returning had pretty good springs from what I heard. But, we asked Josh Heupel a lot, how does your offense get better? What can you do differently in year two? And he's always pointed to your personnel being different. And certainly, Velus Jones and Jalen Hyde are not the same, they're not the same player. And if you go from Peyton to say Brew McCoy, and even Ramel Keaton's more of a, he's a longer guy, more of a, and doesn't maybe have the breakaway speed that Peyton does, but those are different pieces that you're going to have to find ways to use in your offense. So, that's the two big question marks on offense going into the season potentially here are what they do at tackle, which is now left tackle instead of right tackle, which is where Cade May started last season. Also, what they do with those two wide receiver spots.
For sure. Let's go ahead and switch to the defense here. I had the defense power rated like top 50 ish, so not a bad defense, but not a real dominant unit either last year. What do you see being materially different about this defense? I guess the one just that jumps off to me the screen is your top three guys up front from the defensive line, at least by snap count, maybe not by talent, are gone. Is that where you'd go with that probably?
Yeah, I think the big questions probably are maybe more, well, there's really three questions with the defense, one at each level. One in the front is how are they going to get after the quarterback? Too often last year, their pass rush was inconsistent best. It's funny, they set a school record and ranked in the top 10 in tackles for loss last season with, I think, 102. But they were middle of the pack in the SEC in sacks. So a lot of that was against the run and maybe even outside on some screens and stuff. But can they get after the quarterback? The guys you mentioned that are leaving, Matthew Butler was a fifth-round pick. He was great for them, tone setter, leadership. It's going to be tough to replace him. They've got some guys that have started and that have played at that, at those interior spots. But to me, when I look at the defensive line, it's all about the edge guys. And these guys need to be able to win. It's guys like Byron Young, who shared the team lead in tackles for loss and sacks. I think he could have a really big year, potentially maybe even double-digit sacks if I think he's got that in him. And then Tyler Barron, who's a guy that was another former four-star recruiter under the old staff that he was kind of hit and miss last year. I don't think he was fully healthy, but he had that brief flirtation with the transfer portal back in January, but he's back and bought in. I think those are two guys that it starts with up front. And looking at the rest of the defense, they have to get better at linebacker. I think they have to get better at safety. They haven't really added anybody in from the portal at linebacker. So Jeremy Banks is the top guy there. I think he had 128 tackles. I think he's got a really high ceiling, chance to be a really good player. And then sort of the wild card with that group is Juwan Mitchell, who's the transfer they brought in from Texas last year. They got about three games out of him. His shoulder just wasn't ever right. And so he went on the shelf and underwent surgery, I think, in October. There was a question whether he was going to be bought in enough to stay. He has been bought in. He's not, he wasn't fully healthy in the spring, but he's a guy that you can almost look at as a new transfer just because you didn't get any, hardly anything out of him last season. And the secondary is probably the most intriguing part because they've added a couple transfers there. Wesley Walker was a starter at Georgia Tech. Andre Turrentine was a former four-star guy that was just played his freshman year at Ohio State. So, but those guys, I think, are going to join the mix where you're replacing two draft picks, Alante Taylor and Theo Jackson. So they each have to get better at each level for sure. And I think your characterization of a defense that's good but not great is accurate. And the question is, with the way that this offense plays, if you're playing defense, you're expecting every stop you get to be you're leading, you have a 7-point lead increase on the scoreboard. So they have to be a defense that generates negative plays. They have to be a defense that generates turnovers. They have to be a defense that stands up in the red zone and gets stops there. And we'll have to see if the personnel that they brought back and developed and the personnel that they brought in, particularly in the secondary, what impact those guys can have going into the season.
For sure. I mean, getting off the field in – those longer down situations. I look at my numbers here.
They were really bad on third down last year.
Yeah, everything is sort of just okay, decent, good, a little below average, and then passing down success rate allowed, 103rd.
Yeah, that was a real struggle. And that goes back to the defensive line is you have to be able to win when you rush four. You have to have guys off the edge that can win on one-on-one. You have to have guys that can make plays in the back end and guys that can hold up in coverage to where you don't have to play zone every time, right? The middle of the field, defending the middle of the field was really a trouble spot for Tennessee last year. Sort of that quartet with the two linebackers and the two safeties, that was an area that teams really went at and had a lot of that success on third down. So that's the big one. You know, I look at that defense, and even in their close losses, they lost three games by, were one possession games, Ole Miss, Pittsburgh, and Purdue. And in each of those games, the defense gave the offense the ball back, I think, twice in the fourth quarter against Pittsburgh with the chance to tie. I think Ole Miss, they gave it to them three times with a chance to go take the lead, and the offense couldn't finish it. And then in the Purdue game, I think, they got – everybody looks back at that game. They gave up like 600 something yards. But there was a stretch in the third quarter that they got three straight stops, maybe an interception or two in there, and the offense couldn't build on the lead. So, I think the third down defense is obviously – you ask any of the coaches this spring, that's the first thing out of their mouth. Have to get better on third down, have to be able to win with the pass rush of sending just four guys because you need difference makers up front, but I also don't think they have the guys in the secondary that they can just go play one-on-one and blitz guys all day. So that's sort of the poison that you have to pick if you're Tim Banks and this defensive staff, just to, from a third down scenario to a third down scenario is how do you approach sending extra guys to try to get pressure, or do you sit back and try to play coverage and hope that one of your front four guys can get home?
It's going to be fascinating to watch how that evolves. I mean, you almost think if you're running a can you call it like Baylor-esque system? I know it's not exactly the same thing, but a lot of the principles as far as tempo and field spacing are certainly similar there. And I think Heupel and Levy probably swapped notes a time or two when they were there at UCF. It almost makes more sense to play a little more aggressively, give up a few more explosives, but get the ball back to your offense even more, because under the theory that you're more comfortable playing a 15, 16 possession game than the opponent is, and you may not blink like they might. I feel like Kentucky gets a lot of love. South Carolina gets a lot of love in with the transfer portal work they've done. But if Georgia faltered a lot, is Tennessee
a lot?
Right. I mean, I think I've got them for between like 7 and 9 regular season wins. Tennessee, not Georgia. Tennessee could sneak up there and be a division dark. I guess everybody other than Georgia is a dark horse, technically, right, in this division.
Right.
But
right.
There's no reason, if Georgia really faltered a ton, that Tennessee couldn't be that team to sneak up there, I guess, in the East.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of going into last season, you even if you were optimistic, you were looking at a handful of games as sort of those toss-up games, those either-or games. Those are going to be the games that determine whether you go 6-6 or maybe 8-4. I think 7-9 wins is probably right where I am, too. I don't think it's realistic to expect them to beat Alabama or Georgia this season. I mean, on any given Saturday, I suppose that could happen, but I don't know that the any given Saturday really applies to those two elites right now. But you look at the games with Kentucky, South Carolina, they play Pittsburgh in the second week of the season. That's a toss-up game because it's up there. Who they have? They play LSU out of the West this year, so they got to go down to Baton Rouge, which, what are they going to look like under Brian Kelly in his first season? So there's a lot of those games that are sort of going to be the swing games that are going to be the difference in maybe winning 7 games or maybe winning maybe 9-3 or even more. So could they be the dark horse? Like you said, I think everybody in the division is a dark horse. I do think there are some question marks on the defense. I wonder if they're going to be good enough to get enough stops to not put too much pressure on the offense to have to score every possession. The offense, I think, has to get better in some of those situations because, like I mentioned, in some of those close games, in the SEC, that's what your record is going to hinge on, is those close games, those crunch games, those games where it's down to a score in the fourth quarter. Can this offense execute well enough when teams aren't going to be giving up stuff that's going to let them throw it over the top? Right, you're going to have to be able to execute for 9, 8, 9, 10 plays to maybe get yourself in a position to kick a winning field goal or go score a go ahead touchdown. So can they handle those situations better? And can they sort of deliver in those close games? Because there's going to be those games. That's going to be the difference, and that's going to be what defines, I think, this Tennessee team. Sort of in a way it was last season, but going into last season, you weren't really looking at it that way, right? You were wondering, can they scrape out 6 wins somewhere based on just the off season that they had. So I think 7-9 wins is a good range. The thing I will say about Tennessee is other than Alabama, what game are they going into next season thinking, all right, we don't have we have the advantage of quarterback, right? I mean, that's going to be, I think that's something that's big for them. And because, I think Hooker's probably maybe second or third best quarterback in the SEC. I know, Will Levis is getting a lot of love for some mock drafts early next year.
That's projection, though, isn't it? I mean, Will Levis was right. 24 touchdowns, 13 picks. Hooker was 31-3. I mean, I'm
right. Right. To me, it's either Hooker or KJ Jefferson, and their numbers are very, very similar. Based on last season, and
similar offenses too, somewhat.
Right. And say what you will about Stetson Bennett. I think if you took him and put him in another offense, it would be different. Yeah. If you took other quarterbacks and put them with that team, with that defense, with the mindset, you can only, you really only have to go score 21 points and you're going to win. So, I don't know. I think that's a big advantage for Tennessee going into next season, but I do wonder, can they get the defensive stops that they need? Can they get off the field on those third down situations and in the moments when the offense has to go win the game, can they go do it? Because there were a couple of times where they came up short in that area. And like we said, that those are those tight games are going to be the difference in 7-5 and 9-3 or even better.
No doubt about it. Patrick Brown, bloodied and bruised because his 1 year old headbutted him, came on the show anyway, really delivered the goods. Everybody needs to check out Go Loss 24/7. Hey man, playing through it, and you got the 1 year old playing to the echo of the whistle.
Right,
awesome, man. Also, guys, go check out the Go Balls 24/7 podcast. Follow Patrick on Twitter, and we'll have to have you back on for a little quickie fall previews as well, Patrick. Really appreciate this. All right, that's the bell. Cover 3 college football summer school is over for today, but don't worry, we'll be back soon with even more episodes filling you in on the top teams in college football. Please give us those 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Follow us on YouTube and on Twitter at Cover3 Podcast, and we'll see y'all soon.
It's the NFL offseason, but on Pick 6, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, the football season never stops. Host Will Brinson, John Breach, and Tyler Sullivan are joined by analysts like Brady Quinn, Leslie Deuceable, Katie Mox, and RJ White to keep you in the loop on everything happening around the league. Whether it's free agents signing with new teams, the all-important NFL draft, or schedule release day, Pick 6 has you covered. As the face of the league changes with every team move and player pickup this spring, Pick 6 is a must listen. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and anywhere podcasts are found.